another champagne pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there! Still don't miss it. Feel free. You can do that one day. I will give you I'll give you tomorrow. You can practice all night.
I don't want tomorrow.
And you can hello there it tomorrow.
I'm going to come up with something else.
Nope.
Then we can alternate.
No.
You get Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I get Tuesday, Thursday.
Okay, we'll have a show open custody agreement.
Hello!
Sup, everybody!
Yeah. Sup, everybody. Joey Bosa. Sup.
Why y'all here?
Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Gibbs, how are you?
Good, fellas. How are you?
We are good.
It's a big day today.
Are you feeling better today, Gibbs?
Dude, this virus thing is just a pain. And I'm working like double
shifts
this week.
You're still battling it?
Yeah.
Stay out of the Hustler Club.
Monica's had it for like 3 weeks. It's a virus. It's going through the entire Olmsted Falls schools. I'd like to thank my 11-year-old for bringing it home.
Seriously.
It's fantastic.
Thanks.
And it's like, it's auto show week, so I got double duty. I'm running Hooli every day, so I'm here from like noon to like 8 every day.
Do we have any of that auto show, Dante Whitner's?
I believe we do.
All right, so we can get into some of that. So today, big things on the show today. We'll just kick it off right at the top. Sir Andrew Gribble, Brown senior staff writer at 1:30, giving his thoughts on the Combine. 2 o'clock after further review, Combine edition, and then 2:15. The Browns executive vice president of football operations, Sasha Brown, will be live in studio with us.
Whoa.
And I urge you all to tweet me at Nathan Zagura, tweet at Browns_daily, and use the hashtag Ask Sash, and we will get those questions to him on air. As long as you keep it clean, keep it street legal, we'll do that. But Sasha Brown will be with us for his first interview since returning from the Combine. We'll be able to get the latest thoughts on the Combine, the latest on the status with any of our free agents, if he is, Phil's willing to discuss that. And my friend Tarek tweeted me, why won't Sasha respond to my LinkedIn invite? We will find that out when Sasha Brown is on there, which I'm sure people are very, very interested to know.
Why you won't respond?
Yeah.
Because he's trying to build a championship franchise.
Where do I want to start? It could be a long list, and it could be distinguished. By the way, yesterday, one of the things we did hear from Dante Whitner is that Josh Gordon ballooned to 255. Josh Gordon not happy about that report. And
what did Josh Gordon say?
He was like, my life is crazy enough. I don't need it. Like, my story's crazy enough. I don't need to be on blast, and I don't need to be regarded as being that weight. 255, which I feel like he was not, and he does not.
I wonder what Josh Gordon looks like, 255.
Man.
Yoked up 255 or sloppy 255?
I don't know. I mean, I follow him on Instagram, so I've seen all of his training. He's in ridiculous shape right now.
Okay.
And I never saw a point where I saw a picture of him and I was like, this guy looks hugemongous. I didn't see that. So I don't know.
And 40 pounds, you would be able to tell.
Yeah. He would look ridiculous. Anyway, so we've got all that. What do you want to ask Sasha Brown again? Use the hashtag AskSosh. Get us those questions. Today is also the deadline around the National Football League to tag a player, and the tags are certainly coming in right now. Von Miller, franchise tag for the Denver Broncos. Josh Norman, franchise tag for the Carolina Panthers. Alshon Jeffrey, franchise tag for the Bears. We've heard Cordy Glenn, the left tackle, franchise tag for the Buffalo Bills. Olivier Vernon, transition tag for the Miami Dolphins. So he's going to have an opportunity to go out there, get an offer, much like Alex Mack did years ago, have an opportunity to get that offer and decide what he wants to do with that. And then Miami gets to decide if they want to match that or they want to let him go. So those are the things going on in the NFL today. And also, I believe there was one other franchise tag, which was Justin Tucker, the kicker for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Yes. Muhammad Wilkerson getting the tag for the Jets. Justin Tucker, Cordy Glenn, Alshon Jeffrey, Josh Norman, Von Miller, and then Olivier Vernon gets the transition tag. In limbo right now, Trumaine Johnson and Janoris Jenkins. cornerbacks for the Los Angeles Rams, one of them will be tagged.
Okay.
At first it was reported it would be Johnson. Now people are saying Jenkins. So one of those two guys will be tagged. As for the Cleveland Browns, not expecting anybody to be tagged. And certainly we'll pose that question to Sashi Brown as the 4 o'clock deadline today for that. But don't expect much movement there from the Browns in terms of the tag.
And Nathan, news out of Buffalo.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Share with us, man. That information.
Yes, Mario Williams, Super Mario, coming off a season where it just didn't seem to fit really in that Rex Ryan defense, was complaining about his role all year, coming off of just 5 sacks, and he has been released and will be a free agent. Super Mario Williams, again, will be a free agent as he has been released.
$12.9 million off their cap.
Huge, which is certainly quite a bit. So that was probably that's the biggest cut we've seen, I'd say, so far this offseason.
Yeah. And that was and even, you know, Vic Carucci, you know,
he knew it
was coming a long time ago. No surprise.
Absolutely. And by the way, also Gary Barnage, big play Gare in Egypt for American Football Without Barriers. And he is there with a lot of players from around the league. D'Angelo Williams. Also, Marshawn Lynch is there.
And rapping on a camel.
And a ghost camel. The camel wasn't actually even there. He's riding a camel that doesn't exist.
Wow.
So that's what he is doing there.
It's like a unicorn camel.
It is. Like a unicorn. Like New Day. The New Day likes unicorns. See? They're growing on you.
Oh, my God.
You put those two together. I don't know.
Gibbs, don't oh, my God, me.
Oh, my God.
Unreal.
What do you think of that, Wilhelm?
If you – first of all, I don't care. Okay? I had no clue that a New Day – if you lined up 50 gentlemen, okay, black, white, yellow, purple, I could not pick out – they have to be athletic looking. I could not pick out the individuals that probably make up – are they a group?
They are a faction.
Okay, a faction. I could not pick out one single individual from the faction.
If you heard them say, LaBooty James, though, you would know it was the New Day.
No, I probably wouldn't, because it was your microphone leaned down to your laptop.
But everybody could hear it.
Saying it.
Gibbs liked it. Okay. Gibbs didn't like it.
He could hear it.
Big Irv, Cameron Irving, saying, I'm work in progress. Just watch me. Tweeted a picture of himself wearing sunglasses.
Can we see it on the practice field or in the gym? I don't need to see you with shades on.
Hopefully we will. So here's Josh Gordon, by the way. We were talking earlier, and you want to know what he said, like, in his exact tweets.
Yeah, please.
So Josh Gordon started off, he goes, 255, LOL, to Dante Whitner. Dante Whitner now has changed it back to 245, and he's still not happy. He goes, come on now, my story's crazy enough. No need for fabrication. Shake my head. Then he said, I love the game. I love the hustle. And hashtag ball player, tweeting out an Instagram picture of himself from the Pro Bowl making a nice catch. And those jerseys that I wish had become the Cleveland Browns jerseys. Those jerseys were so
sweet.
The
gunmetal with the silver and the orange?
The silver and that like hot orange. Yeah. Those were, oh, man, were those nasty.
I just ordered some new sneaks simply because I am an employee of the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
And I don't have much orange in my shoe game repertoire.
Yeah, I had to customize some KDs to get some orange.
Yes, exactly. The and thanks to my wife's father, my mother, and someone else got me some Nike gift cards. So last night I was on Nike.com and ordered some new sneaks. One pair is going to be exceptionally orange to go with the zip-ups, the polos that we, you know, so readily have to wear as a part of being, you know, Cleveland Browns radio.
You're so brazenly showing your arms today in the studio.
Can't. It's radio.
Yes, at times we're told no arms for us. That's why
I still roll up the sleeves.
Roll up the sleeves, yeah. Say, what you going to do? By the way, the Redskins have slapped the non-exclusive franchise tag on quarterback Kirk Cousins. What a great deal for that guy. I mean,
3,000% increase over his salary from last season.
Yeah, not a bad situation there. So right now, Glenn's tag, Albert Breer reporting Glenn's tag, $13.7 million, Norman $14 million, Justin Tucker $4.6 million, Muhammad Wilkerson $15.7 million, Alshon Jeffrey $14.6 million, Olivier Vernon with the transition $12.7 million, Von Miller says to be announced. But yeah, again, I don't believe that the Browns are going to use the tag. We've heard Mitchell Schwartz wants a large sum of money to make him the highest paid right tackle in the NFL. I don't think he is the highest paid right. I mean, the guy hasn't made a Pro Bowl. It's super solid, but at some point you got to figure out what the right value is. And I want Mitchell Schwartz.
But
here.
This is the player's mentality is, okay, you come out of the gates guns a blazing,
sure,
asking for a big number
as you should
because this is your chance. Mitchell Schwartz maybe one and only time to secure a, you know, somewhere between $15 and $30 million in his entire career. And I'm talking about money in his bank, okay?
Yep.
This is his one shot, okay? And I would ask everyone out there who's going, well, why is he coming out with such a big number? This is your one shot to go get that kind of money. It's like you shoot for the stars, you fall to the moon. That's the mentality that these agents and players take. And, of course, agents represent these players. Players, their egos are large. What their value truly is to themselves is larger than it is to the team, and in most cases around the league as well, which is why the negotiating back and forth, it's, you know, you'll find those guys that are just, they draw their line in the sand and they'd rather test free agency and go elsewhere, hoping one team, not the team that they're currently or have played with, falls in love with them and pays them that star's money, right?
And it's going to happen. There's so much money out there.
It always does. There's so much money out there. They've just been given more. The Cleveland Browns have a lot of it. Mitchell Schwartz and his agent know that. And they're trying to find, you know, what's that number that, okay, we're comfortable with 7 a year, but we're going to ask for 8.8 a year on average, okay? Over the course of a 5-year deal, that's $10 more million in Mitchell Schwartz's pocket. Would you not ask for it if this is your one and only time to make that $10 million? Of course you are. But if you settle for 7.5 or 7.6, that $6 million, you know, that $600,000 times 5, still $3 million more,
sure,
in your pocket. That's the push and pull that many of these free agents right now, high value free agents, are going through.
Yeah, and that's why you're seeing a lot of these deals not getting done. I think players want to see what the market actually is going to be with all this money that's out there to be spent.
100%.
And so they want to say, well, maybe the numbers that we used to use for certain positions, et cetera, that those aren't going to be relevant in the world going forward.
You're right. And see, the one negative or knock against Mitchell Schwartz's case that you've kind of already made is never been a Pro Bowler, never been an All-Pro, because what you want to do is when another team makes that right tackle their priority and pays him that A money, that stars money, Mitchell Schwartz wants to compare himself to that guy and go, hey, this guy got $46 million over the course of 5 or whatever that number is, but that guy's probably got Pro Bowls and all pros and has been, you know, a mainstay along that offensive line, where Mitchell Schwartz, as you said, is solid and you don't want to lose a guy like that, but you're not going to overpay, because that is what has gotten this franchise in trouble in years past, is overpaying for BNC talent that never performs or plays at the level that you're paying him to play at.
Gibbs, as you look at this, yes, for this new group led by Sashi Brown, will be with the 215. If the Browns were not to bring back any of the four guys, would that be to you a wait and see? Would that be an automatic blemish in your mind? Would it be a prudent thing in your mind? How would you react to that?
I think it would set them back a little bit, because you're already trying to fill a number of holes on this football team. So now you're saying, we need a number two wide receiver. We need a starting right tackle. You need a starting free safety. I mean, you're essential, and a starting center. You're being asked to replace four starters
from a 3-13 team.
Okay, but those
nothing
aren't
the, to say
those
there,
are no. Those aren't the problems on the team.
Am I wrong? No. I don't disagree with that either. I think it's tough because, yeah, you don't want to open up more holes for a team that already has. Obviously, when
that's
you have the track record,
concern,
you don't want to open up a lot of holes. Would you in your mind say, and I'm just curious the way that you think about it, would you in your mind say, hey, I don't care if we grossly overpay for one or two of those guys, but we've got to keep two of them? Or would you say, okay, these are the values I'm willing to go to. If they want more than that, would you be okay letting them walk?
I think you've got, in my mind, you've got to bring back at least one of the two offensive linemen.
Okay.
And
would you make Mitchell Schwartz the highest paid right tackle in the NFL?
No.
Okay.
I might make Alex Mack the highest paid center.
Okay.
Right. And which of these free agents do you feel moving forward that you must have to be competitive in the 2016 season?
I think you need Alex Mack. And
even though you drafted Cam Irving potentially to be to play
Cam
his
Irving
true position.
Cam Irving hasn't proven anything.
Right, but he's
he hasn't played the position he was drafted to play.
In all fairness, yes. I agree.
Yes.
I feel like if you are indeed going to take a quarterback at number two, you better keep him upright. And you have a proven commodity in Alex Mack. You don't know what you have in Cam Irving.
But, I mean, realistically, and I think I'm kind of playing along with the take that Nathan consistently has is, you've had Alex Mack. You've had Joe Thomas. You have Joel Bitonio. You have Mitchell Schwartz and John Greco. And quarterback play was not really the issue last year, and you still went 3-13. So are you overvaluing these free agents? Because is there really going to be that big of a drop-off? Because with these players, it still didn't turn into wins. You still weren't able to run the football at will on anybody in the National Football League.
But is that on them or is that on the scheme? Or is it on both?
I would say that if you looked at it, you know, if you went through them, Travis Benjamin, this was the first year he's ever been over 500 yards in his career or three touchdowns in a season.
I would agree.
So Travis, I think because of
capitalizing on his 1 year
and capitalizing on his opportunity. I mean, we had nobody else.
And frankly, good
receiver.
For him.
Great for him. Yeah, and I love Travis.
The guy's going to cash in. He's going to have a payday. It's with us. Maybe it's with someone else.
I like
else.
Travis so much. I gave the fist pump heard around the world for Travis Benjamin against the Rams. And
oh my God.
So I like Travis, but
you
I'm
didn't
not
catch Josh McCown running into the wall.
If I had tried to stop him, I would have been smushed like a grape.
You would have been national
sacrifice,
news, buddy.
Bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on,
I would have done it.
How bad do you want him to win?
Very
exactly.
Bad. Very bad.
Not bad enough.
So, Travis, it's interesting, right? I think in an ideal world, you have Travis as your number three receiver and punt returner.
Yeah.
That's really the ideal
who is
scenario
Travis,
for
who is, who's, who is Travis Benjamin on another team in the National Football League?
Right. That's the question.
Is he a Roddy White?
No.
For Atlanta?
I mean, now Roddy White or like Roddy White?
Roddy
in his
White
day?
Prime,
no.
26 years old.
Absolutely not.
No. Okay, so who is he that would be a solid punt returner and a third receiver in the NFL right now? Who is he comparable to? And then you look at the money that team is paying that guy in that role is the point that I'm trying to make.
Right. He's like he's never been quite as productive. I guess maybe this year he was a little more productive, but he's kind of like a Ted Ginn. He's a vertical guy.
Right.
Now, Ted Ginn this year had 739 and 10, but you look at his career, that's kind of the guy that he would be like, right? Ted Ginn had been never over – he had his second year in the league, he had 790 yards, two touchdowns, had never been over five touchdowns before this season, and had only been over 600 yards once in his career. That's kind of what he is. He's a situational vertical guy, plus punt returner.
And has Ted Ginn, who's now playing on, what, his fourth team? Third team?
Arizona
Carolina,
twice.
Miami. Okay, so, Miami. Right. So he's been with four teams, Carolina twice in two different stays. Has he ever been paid as a priority free agent other than being drafted ninth overall?
No.
He's been released and signed somewhere and added to a system.
I could see where Travis Benjamin, though, people say, like what you know Tyler Lockett did for Seattle, that kind of a role, where he is certainly a plus player, and you'd like to get him down. You'd like to keep him. If I'm Travis Benjamin, though, I'm going to go try to get big money.
Of course.
And if I'm the Browns, though, I don't know. I'm willing to give Travis Benjamin
no.
big money. But I want him here, so it's an intersection of the value. I think that you are right. I would, if I had my druthers. The funny thing about it is I wouldn't want to make Mitchell say the number one right tackle in the NFL, but I think it's easier to keep him knowing that you drafted Cam Irving to play that position where he was regarded as the top center. So for Cam Irving on his rookie deal, you're going to get, let's say he plays well but not great. So let's say he's maybe 75% as effective as Alex Mack. You're getting him at a 20% of the cost.
What, $800,000?
Yeah, probably a little more than that. 19th pick in the draft. I'm going to call it. Let's
but
call
a
it 2 million.
Year, still probably rookie minimum as a second year guy.
We can look at
right.
it so we can get the answer.
So you're getting him for about 10 to 15% of what you're paying Alex Mack.
Or, yeah, maybe a little bit higher of a percentage than that. I'll get the exact number. But the point is, these are the things that you go through. Now, you can't just sit on the money forever. You've got to retain your key guys. But the point is locking yourselves into long-term deals with the right guys. And I think that this is tough. And I think that you come in, and that's part of the tough part about having new regimes time after time after time. These aren't guys. Sashi's never drafted anymore before. These aren't guys that Sashi has drafted. Now, so Sashi has his evaluation of them. You know, Mac, if he stayed, you'd imagine on a new deal, Mac would be up. You know, he's at $8 million. You'd imagine it would be more than that if he ended up staying.
Right.
So when you get down, and I'm trying to get down there, Cam Irving for this year counts 2.1 against the cap. He's got
okay.
a prorated
bonus. So he's
got a
prorated bonus. What's his base salary?
Just 860.
Okay, as 800. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. So, yes, I mean, you're talking about 10% of the cost.
Right.
25%, and if he gets up to, you know, if Alex Mack got $10 million, it would be, which he might, somewhere on the open market. You're talking about a 20%, so you're an 80% savings for 80% of the value.
Right.
So it's just an interesting thing, and that's why it's so tough. I don't know how I feel about it. I feel, you know, if all four were to go, and you don't, you are opening up more holes on a team with a lot of holes. At the same time, you know, you want to make sure that you're investing your money in the right guys. Now, I think that there are guys that have shown they're worthy of it, but they also have to be, you have to have an intersection of the perceived values on both sides.
Okay, so I go back to Buster Skrine.
That was, in my opinion, an awful decision.
Yeah.
I don't mind if you think that somebody out there is a better player and better for your scheme and you don't want Buster, but you wanted some other 26-year-old corner that you liked better than Buster that fit your profile for what you want to do better, that's fine. What you can't keep doing is letting 25, 26-year-old Buster go to sign for 5.5 a year to sign 30-plus-year-old Tremont, even though I love Tremont and I thought he was our best corner last year, for 7-plus a year. You can't let, you know, young T.J. Ward go for less than an older Dante Whitner. You can't make decisions like that. That's not where we are. Because this is a team that is building, and they need to build it the right way, and hopefully that's what they'll do. All right, we'll get your thoughts on that, your reaction, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm Gibbs, Cleveland Browns Daily.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, of course, with you, along with Jason Gibbs. Just want to say, attention high school football players, registration is open for the 2016 Cleveland Browns High School Showcase. This NFL-style combine is designed for high school football players who want to continue their playing career at the collegiate level. Showcase your skills in front of college scouts and coaches. For more information and to register, visit clevelandbrowns.com/showcase. All right, Zagura Wilhelm back here, 216-578-0850. Still to come, Sir Andrew Gribble at 1:30. Sasha Brown, the Executive Vice President of Football Operations, at 2:15. The Bills continuing their purge. Anthony Dixon has been released by the Bills, a.k.a. Booby Dixon.
Booby. I played with Booby in San Francisco.
Yeah.
He's a wild man.
Tough dude.
Tough dude.
Yes.
Big dude.
Big dude. And Marquise Gray, remember him, the tight end for the Cleveland Browns, who was one of the final cuts 2 years ago. He has also been released by the Buffalo Bills. So I think a lot of speculation right now about the Browns. What are we going to do? As Trey Free says, what's the point of saving money if we won't use any in free agency? What are we saving for? Seems stupid to sign unproven over proven talent. I don't know who said you would sign unproven talent to replace proven talent, but I do think it's an interesting situation for the Browns as it relates to these free agents. And,
yeah,
and we certainly will talk about that.
We definitely will. And I think, you know, our approach to, you know, the free agents here with Cleveland that are hitting the market, how we approach free agency to bring outside free agents here to Cleveland, our approach to the NFL draft, who we take in the NFL draft, for this regime that's going to be here for the next 3 to 5 years, at minimum, selecting and making these moves, I think this is a great way to understand who and how they will do business.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's go to the phone lines. 216-578-0850. Reggie in Youngstown. Reg.
Hey, guys. How you doing today? How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, fellas, I just wanted to get in right quick to ask you I hear you, you know, you're discussing it again, and we talked about it before and stuff. And that's that right, our right tackle right there. I just would like to know, you know, what is the, reporter who makes out, the points or whatever you want to call it, to say that he's like one of the better tackles in the league, and they couldn't even run to his side. They ran majority of their plays, went to the left side of the line with Joe Thomas and them, and they barely ever ran to the right side. I mean, I'm just trying to make some sense out of that. I don't understand that, guys. I'm going to get off and let y'all talk about it for me, okay?
Right. You got it, Reg. Thank you. And the Browns' offensive line, I think, had a lot of issues. I think as much as it was, you look at the individuals on the offensive line, because that has a lot to do with it. You know, Matt, and you've talked to me so many times about how important the position coach is. And losing Andy Moeller kind of abruptly, as the Browns did at the beginning of the season, I thought seemed to set this line back a little
bit. Absolutely. And I think, you know, you and I and the opportunity to be out there and watch individuals and be out there for practices, for OTAs, for mini camps, and so on and so forth, even when it's not technically available, you know, for the media to be out there, it was a great thing for us. And for me, as I not only look at, you know, the quarterback group with Johnny Manziel, I'm always, you know, in tune with the relationships and who's really running the drills and running the groups. And Andy Moeller was... he was the go-get. George DeLeon, no, not to knock him as a football coach, but he was a background kind of, you know, off to the side coach after a play that would make some, you know, little comments to guys, little, you know, coaching comments. But Andy Moeller was the guy walking them through the footwork and the hand placement and the movements and the combo blocks and really running that room. So to lose someone like that, regardless, you know, of who's going to replace him, is very tough. And probably took them, you know, a little while to get in tune with George and the way he runs a room and the way and his expectations of them at practice. And there probably was a little bit of fall off, and we saw that on the football field.
Certainly did. And just for people wondering, so last year when the Browns ran outside the right end, they averaged 3.1 yards a carry. When they ran behind the right tackle, 3.8, behind the right guard, 4.5, behind the center, 3.7, left guard right guard was 4.5, middle right was 3.7, middle left 4.0, left guard 4.8, left tackle 3.8, and around the left end just 2.5. So the Browns had struggled with their tackles, and that's a knock on both of them, both better pass protectors and run blockers, running to the edges. They had their most success behind the guards, and left guard would have been Joel Bitonio, and then Austin Pastore, who stepped in and did seriously bring some physicality to this line towards the end of the season.
But to be very honest, and understanding the zone run scheme, even watching the Cleveland Browns in the Shanahan scheme and, of course, the John DeFilippo scheme this year, if you watch Arian Foster or you watched even Terrell Davis, to go back to the Bronco days with Gary Kubiak and the, you know, that offensive with Shanahan and that zone run scheme there, the ball really never bounces outside, okay? Because defenses in that zone run scheme want to protect that hard edge so that you can kind of erase the opportunity for the ball to go outside. What's so great about the zone scheme is there really is no holes. It seems organically created through the unison of the offensive unit and their ability to get color on color and get up to that second level. And it's where the cutbacks come from and so on and so forth. So it's hard to gauge based on those stats, you know, oh, we can't run outside. The only times we really tried to run outside is maybe some, you know, some tackle, you know, guard tackle, you know, pulls or some of those, you know, toss plays that I just think we've never been good at over the last couple of years because it goes against what the zone run scheme really is all about.
Exactly, and I thought at the end of the year we started doing more power, just man-to-man blocking, and that's where the Browns seem to have a
body on
bit,
a body.
Body on a body, a little more success in that ground game. That's right. Let's go north of the border.
Hey, gentlemen.
Cam from Canada. What's up, Cam?
How's things?
Everything is good with us. How are you doing?
I'm great. Good coverage. Really great coverage you guys provided for the draft, for the combine. Thank you.
You got it, man.
At some point in time, we have to stop chasing 6 wins and 7 wins. And, like, this thing has to be nuked. It has to be nuked. It's sick. And so at some point in time, we have to make a break away from the concept and the mindset that, oh, we can't lose so-and-so, we can't lose so-and-so. There's a whole talent pool of kids out there willing to break in and wanting to break in, but we have to lose that mentality that we're going to chase six wins or seven wins. It's killing us. It's smothering us. We need to get rid of anybody that's not part of the solution. And as far as the offensive line goes, I think we coached around a silo, at least one silo, on that offensive line. I don't think, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to take a lot of heat for this. I don't think Joe Thomas is engaged to play the type of style that's going to win in our conference. I don't think he is. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a great player. He's going to be great in some other scheme. But I don't think he's engaged. And when you're coaching around a guy who's not engaged and he's your leader, it has a pedagogy on everyone around him. We brought Pastor in. He brought a smash mouth mentality, and we ended up in a situation where we were much better. We went from 32nd, I think, in the league to 18th in 3 weeks. So we need to lose the guys that are silos. We need to lose the guys that are not 100% engaged to anything beyond playing out their contracts. Let's get hungry and mean. We're winning four games a year anyways. Why don't we do it with 23 and 24-year-old guys?
And I think for this team, that's what you're going to see, them get younger and hungrier, and hopefully they can start to build it from the ground up. And that's what they are going to do, I believe, under Sash Brown. We'll have the opportunity to ask him. Again, you can tweet us. Use the questions. Hashtag Ask Sash. We'll ask him his philosophies on free agency, his philosophies on retaining his own, how he balances the need to retain his own talent with the values that these people want for this squad. So we'll talk about all that. When we come back, though, we will talk with the Sir Andrew Gribble. Gribbs, just by looking up your name on Twitter, people are into Sir Andrew. It's all over the place. I don't know if you noticed it. It is. It's taken off. It's a pretty big deal. So we're going to have him, which is always a big deal for us here on CBD, right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily here from the Dog Bowl in Berea. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and Sir Andrew Gribble, fresh off of his trip to Indianapolis for the Combine. Gribbs, what did you think of your time there in Indy this year?
It was great. A good fourth time going, probably my best time going, getting more comfortable with the Indianapolis scene, the NFL Combine scene. And even we were saying it while we were there, but even in the last 4 years, that thing is just grown up and gotten bigger and bigger every year. This was the most crowded I've seen it from a media standpoint at that event. And really, in the last 4 years, probably the least star power at the Combine we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah.
Because I was there for the long-awaited Manti Te'o press conference, the Michael Sam press conference. Last year was Jameis. This year, not much. I guess Kim Diche got all the headlines for all the wrong reasons, I would say, for his press conference this year. That was kind of an unexpected, just too much honesty press conference that we saw. Robert Kim Diche.
Okay.
Yeah. I was told by somebody at the Combine.
Dragging down Laramie Tunsil as well.
About him, that if you had to lock all the Combine prospects in a room together and bet on which one would be the one person to walk back out that door at the very end of it, that's who they would bet on.
I mean, he's an incredible player. And I remember there was talk going into last college football season that Ole Miss could have three top 10 picks in the upcoming draft. And it looks like they're just going to have one, because I think Treadwell is not as high as we used to think he was. And then
I like him.
DJ's got some character issues.
That guy's 20 years old and is a grown man. I mean, physically, he is just – he looks – you know, certain
the
people
Treadwell?
You see, yeah, just look different.
How
he
about
looks
the,
different.
I saw a picture of the defensive lineman from Alabama who's also 20, and he looks like he's like 40.
Yeah, Treadwell does look 40, but he just looks
What's his name?
A'shaun Robinson. He said in the media gathering that they asked him why he grows out his beard and shaves his head, if it's for intimidation. And he said no, it's because he started going bald. So he started shaving, and people – it was a thing in Alabama when I was down there. They're like, wow, this guy looks really old. And he thought it was, like, annoying at first, but then he, like, grew to embrace it kind
I'm
of
gonna
thing.
Make, so. I'd be willing to – if you could bet on these things, I bet when he is 60, he will also look 40.
It's true. It's a good look.
It is a good look. I think he will age gracefully, A'shaun Robinson. So Obviously, going down there, all the focus for the Browns on the quarterbacks. What were your takeaways at that position?
Well, and it's echoing what we said last week, but it's something where I came away thinking, I think the two big things with the quarterbacks is, one, you might have gone into the week thinking there was three. I think we left that week with the consensus that it's probably down to two guys that you would consider at that number two spot, because I just think Paxton Lynch has a lot of athletic tools that you really like about him, but the guy just hasn't played a lot of quarterback, and a lot of quarterback where he's throwing the football. I mean, he played wing tee offense in high school, was at Memphis, and really just only blossomed this last year. So he's a guy that has a lot of upside. I think he'd be a great fit for a team that has a quarterback in place for the next years. That's why I think, you know, people keep talking about Dallas needs a quarterback. Why wouldn't Dallas want to try to get a guy like that in the second round? You know, maybe groom him for the future behind Tony Romo, who Jerry Jones said there that they expect to be playing there for four or five more years. So that was one of the takeaways I took away. Two, I think I feel comfortable with Goff and Wentz. There was maybe the concern that if you picked a quarterback at two, it'd be a bit of a reach. I don't think it's as much
Nobody
of a reach
seems to think that
for those two guys. And I think the reason three, I came away, I just don't think, you know, people point to that one draft. It's either 2011 or 2012, the one with Christian Ponder, Blaine Gabbert, and all the other players in that draft were great players. I just don't get the feeling that the talent level is that high in the draft where you can consider, I think the best player available is probably still likeliest going to be a quarterback in that position, because there's just not the sure things at that top of the draft like there have been in these kind of previous years.
We literally spent an hour yesterday battling people who were saying that the Browns were insane if they took a quarterback at number two, and that you couldn't do it. And when you come out of there.
I think the one argument is for Joey Bosa in that position, but then you look at
them. I don't think he fits this defense.
That's exactly what I was saying. I don't think he said he was going to do linebacker drills and said he could potentially play linebacker. I don't think that's a good fit.
Well, now I think after his combine and just reading and understanding, you know, and looking into his numbers with his height and his weight, he's now more of a tweener than he ever is in any point. It's like
4.3 the end.
Yeah, but even still, you know, at 269. Yeah. The dude's got to be playing at more like 285.
That's what the NFL wants him to get back up.
Correct.
To.
Yeah.
I think he probably cut some weight too for the combine, but trying to get the 40
speed. But
then
even just to run a slow 40, you know, because again, you said 30 some pounds between him and J.J. Watt. It was actually 21 pounds. So J.J. Watt was 290, and everyone's showing the comparables 290 and, you know, or 269, significantly different, but the numbers were the same. And the most, you know, glaring one to me was the bench press.
10 reps.
J.J. Watt at 290 did 34. And Joey Bosa at 269, discounting 21 pounds, at 24 reps. And again, I was a linebacker, maybe at 250, doing 20 reps. Okay?
So the thing that's interesting to me about Bosa is that you don't hear he's going to overwhelm you physically like a J.J. Watt does or some of these unbelievable edge rushers do. What people always point out is how great his hands are and how great his hand technique is and how it allows him to dominate. So this is a question for you.
Sure.
When you're dominating collegiate competition because you're so superior with technique in your hands, is that something that necessarily can continue at the next level when you're playing against the best of the best who also have good technique
it can.
And are NFL players?
It can, as long as you make sure and understand the same way there's going to be a jump in speed, there's going to be a jump in technique. So, and I know that Larry Johnson, you know, the coach Larry Johnson that came to Ohio State midway through Bosa's career was a big attribute for his hand technique, why he studies Tombaugh Lee, you know, because Larry Johnson was at Penn State with Tombaugh Lee and so on and so forth. But yes, the same way that you want to get more explosive and continue to get fat, you want to continue to work on your craft because the tackles or guards that he's going to go against are crafty veterans that understand, you know, they don't go for the feints, you know, and so on and so forth, like a boxer, you know, with some of the hand movements. But I think he became a technician with his hand technique, and college guys just weren't able to grasp, you know, what he could do along with being explosive and big and physical.
Gribbs, what surprised you the most at this year's combine?
That's a tough one. I would say just I'm wondering now. I thought there was maybe more uncertainty with that number one pick with what Tennessee's going to do. Now I just don't see how they can't take Larry Metunsil with that number. But
he looked great.
I mean, I know, and I think Jalen Ramsey looked great. He's one of my favorite players in this draft. I think wherever he goes, I think he's going to be fantastic. But a defensive back just hasn't been taken number one in the modern era of football. It's just not something that happens.
Right.
And they would have to make an unprecedented move, and it would just be something where you're going away from an offensive lineman to protect your franchise quarterback. I just think it's so obvious now what they're going to do with that number one pick, and I wonder, does that affect their ability to potentially trade the pick if it comes down to it? So we'll see. I would think it would be tough for them to maybe bait the Browns into moving up to that number one spot. I just think it's going to be a lot of less drama on that number one pick, similar to maybe last year when we all basically assumed Jameis Winston was going to go number one. And in previous years, I just see no drama with that number one pick anymore.
I agree with you, and I also got the sense that with the way that Goff and Wentz both looked so good and answered so many questions and separated themselves, you don't get the sense that somebody wants to pay to jump to number one to get a quarterback against ahead of the Browns. That if you're the Cowboys, for example, that you feel pretty good with who could be there for. If you're the Niners, I think you have a pretty good chance of getting one of the guys.
Yeah, and this is kind of unrelated to the prospects, but another takeaway I came from the combine is that, you know, everyone's out there trying to get the franchise quarterback, but it's the in-between quarterbacks that have an interesting market right now. You wonder, like, what's going on with Sam Bradford and Colin Kaepernick? Like,
right.
That was a big topic at all the restaurants and throughout the day at the combine. It doesn't look like there's much of a market for Kaepernick right now, even though he's trying to get traded. And it's just kind of a wishy-washy feeling right now between Bradford and Eagles. Like, does that seem like either side is going to be happy with what the end result is in that deal? It seems like he's going to stay, but you wonder if he goes in the open market, who would really even make a big pitch for him?
Yeah.
And now, again, coming out of the combine, if we do in fact go quarterback at number two with Wentz or Goff, talk to us about what direction, either positionally or what player, directly, you would go at 32.
Well, I think the Browns are in a position where, you know, it is a cliche where they've got to take the top player on their board, because unless it's a tight end for some reason. I just that's the only position that you would maybe like steer away from in that spot. But if you're looking at kind of a sweet spot at that point in the draft, I would think if you're looking at wide receiver, there could be a good amount in that range where it feels appropriate to take him at that spot. I think two guys that I look at that fit that kind of size and upside model would be Josh Doctson from TCU. And I think Michael Thomas from Ohio State. I think he's another guy that would fit that spot. I do think that
Will Fuller.
I do think Braxton Miller would be available in that spot, but I don't know if I would probably lean toward the guys who have the prototypical size, speed,
I agree.
And experience if you want them to come in right away and play that traditional wide receiver spot. I think Braxton Miller, I think, would be better served to be going to an offense that already has weapons and they figuring out
like
how to use him. Yeah, you don't want to go to a spot where they don't know how to figure out to use you. I think Hugh Jackson would obviously have some ideas, but I think the traditional wide receiver would be a good spot at 32.
I agree.
I think I worry about how many pass rushers would go before 32 because it's such an in-demand position right now. I've seen some mock drafts with that guy, I can't even pronounce his name, but the guy from Boise State, people thought he might be around in the second round.
Korea.
I've seen him projected mid-first round now.
Yep.
I mean, I think that there's just such a run on pass rushers because everyone's trying to replicate what Denver has and trying to establish that kind of defense. So you worry about the quality level you're getting at 32 of pass rusher as compared to a wide receiver. I do think you can get defensive linemen later in the draft because this is such a loaded defensive line class. I think Mayock said that there's going to be third and fourth round defensive linemen that teams will have given first round grades to.
Like
I think
Willie Henry from Michigan.
It's a loaded
sure.
class. So those are three positions I spotlight. I don't know necessarily if there's going to be a running back worth taking at 32. I don't know about offensive line either. I think this year is not the most loaded offensive line class. So pass rusher and wide receiver, long winded way, I would pinpoint as a spot if you go quarterback in number
two. I think the opportunity to get either a Doctson, a Michael Thomas, or a Will Fuller who ran the blazing time at the combine and showed good hands, that's what everybody was watching with him. I think that would be a natural grab for your new quarterback. Get him some weapons and see what you can do there if the Browns do go quarterback at number two. From talking to people around the league and even your own opinion, do you think right now at this point it's a no-brainer that the Browns take a quarterback number two?
Won't go as far to say no-brainer, but I think it's that's the general opinion. I would say the first mock drafts that were out there in January, they gave out that kind of slight perception that a guy like Bosa would be an option. But then I think once the hires were made, once Hugh Jackson was brought in, once Ray Horton was brought back, I think on a national level, if the Browns did not take a quarterback, it would be a stunner, because I think that's the reaction we got from everyone that you talked to, that I talked to. I think that's the perception. And basically, you know, as we were saying earlier, it's being treated right now as if the draft starts with the Browns. And that's where the chips kind of fall into place after the Browns, because It's just kind of the assumption right now, and I think it's a very good one that Laramie Tunsil is going number one to Tennessee.
And just knowing we're going to have Sashi Brown in here within the next 20, 25 minutes, do you presume that we tag anybody, or it's going to be business as usual? Guys are going to just naturally hit the market while we, the Cleveland Browns, to do their best to continue talks with who we want to come back as a Cleveland Brown.
Yeah, I think he's, as he said last week, I think it would be a surprise at this point, especially since we're not seeing much come out right now about it. The deadline's 4 o'clock. It would be surprising, and I think the only one financially where it would seemingly fit would be Tashaun, but even I think the goal is for a long-term deal there. But it's going to be an interesting week or so. Like you said, it's there's some tough decisions to make, and I think that these guys, especially a guy like Mitchell Schwartz, has a big opportunity in front of him because, as we said, the guys who can – you have the quarterback, the guys who get after the quarterback, and the guys who protect the quarterback. I think that it's the perfect year for him to hit free agency, and he's going to get some lucrative offers out there. I think Travis Benjamin as well, because the receiver class this year is not exactly loaded. Alshon Jeffrey's off the market. So
there isn't a real –
yeah, there's not much
– receiver in the group.
Yeah, there's – I mean, the two guys from Cincinnati are pretty good. That'll be out there, but it's just not a big year for wide receivers and free agency, so that benefits him as well. So it's going to be interesting to follow. I think that we'll see over the next few days if there's any deals that are able to get done. I'm sure Sashi will be able to shed a little bit of light on what's going on, but we'll see. I mean, it's just hard to predict at this point, but I think Sashi was a little bit more optimistic last week than maybe people presumed. I think it would be good to have at least one or two of those guys back, depending on the situation, but it wouldn't surprise me either way.
Yeah, we'll find out. Sashi Brown, the Executive Vice President of Football Operations, will be with us at 2:15 here live in the Dog Bowl in Berea. So get your questions in. Use the hashtag AskSosh. And, of course, keep it tuned to CleanBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app and on Twitter at Andrew_Gribbles. Sir Andrew and Patrick Mark Max bring you all the latest on the Cleveland football Browns. Gribbs, thank you very much, brother.
No problem.
Gotta love Tuesdays with Gribbs. All right, when we come back, we are going to wrap up our first hour, and we'll kick off hour number two, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850.